And now, our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Doomsday Warrior. American Dream Machine. Ted Roczen, known to all the world as the Doomsday Warrior, will go down in the annals of human history as the driving force to restore freedom to a ruined America. The year is 2096. It had been more than 100 years since the devastating nuclear strike against the U.S. by the Soviet Union. The surprise attack had occurred right after peace negotiations in Nepal had seemed to end in progress. Immediately upon return to Moscow, however, Premier Drubkin gave the order to strike. Their secret weapon, working missile defense satellites, capable of remotely firing upon and disabling incoming ICBMs. The control center had been built under the cover of the 1980 Moscow Olympics. Since the Americans didn't bother to show up, the Russians were free to build their Manhattan Project unabated. Missiles were fired from all communist nations simultaneously. Cuba, Georgia, Kazakhstan, Estonia, Hungary, Poland, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Nicaragua. The American population was decimated. Their allies fared no better. England, France, Spain, Italy, all of South America was reduced to rubble in mere minutes. Enough dust was thrown into the atmosphere to darken the skies worldwide for 20 years. The U.S. president at the time was at a photo op in Oregon. That state turned into nothing more than a series of overlapping craters. Southern California turned to a radioactive bay, the tips of skyscrapers just revealing themselves over the tainted waves. Most of America's comparatively feeble counterattack was shot down before touching Russian soil. But several managed to cut through Moscow's computerized missile defense system and land in Russia's breadbasket. America lost its military power. Russia lost its ability to feed itself. The world lost hundreds of years of progress and billions of lives. The U.S., though devastated, never surrendered. A ragtag guerrilla force harassed the brutal Russian occupiers, and a sullen captive population in the new Russian slave fortresses mounted constant revolt. Small underground complexes where freedom fighters hid and gathered strength became, over 100 years, vast cities of free fighters. The free fighters launched more and more sophisticated and massive attacks on the Soviets. As a result of endless guerrilla warfare, the situation slowly changed. By the late 21st century, the regular Soviet forces had been forced to withdraw from American soil. The greatest threat to free America now came from renegade, independent Russian forces. One such force was controlled by Colonel Kilov, a rogue KGB leader possessed of a zealot's drive and a cultist's charisma. With fingers in pots across the globe, Kilov had managed to claw back into power after each and every defeat by Ted Roczen. But after his forces were spectacularly drowned in northern Africa years ago, Kilov disappeared. His body was never found. The world went about the business of trying to clean up the radioactive mess that World War III had caused. No one knew if their efforts would be met with success. Poisons were still filtering down to Earth from the contaminated ionosphere. Vast areas of the planet were forbidden zones, radioactive wastelands. And day by day, the poisons still rained down. It was not at all certain that life on Earth, as it had been known, would survive. Perhaps just the mutant species would endure. Hardy, radiation-resistant creatures, twisted, subhuman monstrosities, or the mutant humans, such as the Doomsday Warrior, men with enhanced strength, reflexes, and healing abilities. Men whose true powers may be unknown, even to them. Roxxon was a man endowed with a keen sixth sense and a well-honed fighting talent. Roxxon was a man who would rather die on his feet than live kneeling before the oppressor.
Come on, man. Tell me what you've been up to. I'm dying out here.
Now, you're not actually dying.
Well, no.
They'd never do that to the special ambassador to the USSR, would they, Detroit?
Hell no, they wouldn't. But you know what I'm talking about. It's fucking boring. We got meetings and commissions and dinners and speeches and more meetings.
You're doing important work in Russia, Ambassador Green. Langford wouldn't have appointed you if he didn't think you were the right man for the job. But if I remember correctly, you didn't much want to take it.
That's an understatement if I ever heard it. But Langford is the president. And if he says I'm the best man for the job, who am I to argue? Making policy and coordinating international cooperation is good and all, but, you know, sometimes I just miss shooting somebody, you know?
The way I hear it, some of those debates over there can get pretty close to it.
The debates? Ha! More like full-on dog piles. But the conflict over here is nothing like what you had to deal with. Taxes, immigration policies, demilitarization. When you've had a 20-foot narga beast so close to your head you can see his last meal on his teeth, this stuff doesn't even make you break a sweat.
Well, see? That's why Langford appointed you.
Yeah, well, I've got a security meeting in a few minutes I've got to prepare for. There's a couple of hardline Zhabnov supporters in Siberia going around inciting riots.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, it will be. Too bad it's the Spetsnaz that gets to have it.
Any news on the Vasily front?
Nope. Still in a coma. Rahala's doing just fine for himself.
No assassination attempts?
Well, once again, it's the Spetsnaz that gets to deal with all the fun stuff, but no. Not since the guys who tried it a year ago.
Yeah, I saw the pictures.
Those were just for the international audience. The video was for us folks in Russia.
Ouch.
You said it.
Talk to you later, Detroit.
Sure thing. Say hi to Rona for me.
Will do.
Ted Roxon's ramjet flyer came out of a thick white cloud, and the cottony blankness before his mismatched light and dark blue eyes was replaced by a spectacular vista. For 100 miles ahead, a vast red-hued desert spread out. The Doomsday Warrior checked his gauges. He was 6,000 feet up over the radioactive wasteland of South Utah, cruising along at a leisurely subsonic 500 miles per hour. His fuel consumption was optimal. His warning indicators all quiet. He'd be at his destination in less than an hour. He hoped that wouldn't be too late. It had taken Roxxon 3 days to repair the old confiscated Soviet ramjet and get it airborne. The 3 days from the time Rock had received Archer's message asking for help, giving a location far out in the wastelands of America's West. He'd hoped to hell that Archer was still alive when he got there. He wished that he could go a bit faster, but 500 was all this aircraft could handle. Roxxon leaned back.
Ah, autopilot.
He consulted the age-yellowed survey map on the seat next to him in the two-passenger craft.
Let's see. Yeah, there was no sign of life around here the last time anybody checked. Good news for the planet. Sparse vegetation, still very arid, but recovering.
Roxxon turned on the automatic cameras in the jet's nose to make an update for the boys back in map division in Century City. He glanced at the radar screen. No bogeys, no challenge in the skies of America these days from Soviet interceptor jets. It was almost eerie how the Soviets had finally packed up their bags and pulled out. The warfare had gone on for over a century. It had been a way of life for all Americans. To win the war against the occupiers had sustained Rock and his team when all hope seemed lost. Now that the battle was won, Chen, Archer, Detroit, McCaughlin, Sharansky, all of the free fighters, now had time aplenty on their hands. There was much to do, but to fighting men, it all seemed dull. That dullness was why Archer had lit out for parts unknown. The huge mountain man couldn't stand being around people who weren't fighting. So Archer had packed up his rucksack and disappeared into the wilderness where Roxanne had found him so many years ago. There had been no messages from the bearded giant for 3 years, until 3 days ago. Roxanne pulled out Archer's message. It was a brief, cryptic scrawl in the handwriting of the mountain man, a message delivered via fax machine in the communications lab at Century City. It was nearly indecipherable, but it clearly said emergency and danger. The message also gave map coordinates to a place called Ball Corner. Roxanne glanced at the chronometer. 50 minutes flight time to go. Roxanne put the note away and lay back in the cracked leatherette pilot's seat. His mind drifted to thoughts about his other friends. McCaughlin, the Scots background free fighter, was still very much the clown, and still the best trail cook Rock had ever known. McCaughlin was in charge of expeditionary forces now that Roxanne was away. The only Russian on the old Rock team, Sharansky, was building up quite a few frequent flyer miles as he divided his time working on scientific projects in Century City and assisting Detroit in Russia. Sharansky had been invaluable over the years. Chen, the Chinese-American who had trained Roxanne in the martial arts, was still teaching his deadly methods back in the Century City gym. Sometimes, Rona would also be part of the Rock team. The only female member of the team had been Roxanne's lover since his teenage years. Now that the fighting was over, Rona Walenda was keeping herself busy. She was at this moment away on a relief mission to Argonville, which was recovering slowly following the crushing of a right-wing takeover there. Roxanne had missed Rona these past months, but the gorgeous redhead Amazon would be back, and all the more desirable for her long absence. Then there was Kim. He hadn't seen her for years. The petite woman was President Langford's blonde and blue-eyed daughter. Rock and Rona had shared many long talks about his other girlfriend, but it was beginning to work itself out naturally. Kim was with her father in the restored White House. Washington was humming with diplomatic activity and endless festivities. Rock had heard that Kim was now the darling of the embassy set, and there were stories about all the glittering parties she ran in Washington. His few letters to Kim had gone unanswered. She was probably having too much fun to remember him. Roxanne pulled himself away from the reverie and looked out over the changing terrain. Assuming he'd make a safe landing, he had no idea what land of trouble he'd find. But Roxanne figured he'd be up to most challenges, even though he was alone.
Huh? That doesn't sound good. Yeah, that doesn't sound good at all. Oh, shit!
Rock struggled with the craft, bringing it lower to let the remaining engine work itself out. Soon, he was skimming over the rolling hills littered with boulders. He even went between two towering buttes.
Come on! Come on!
Oh, come on!
He was hitting the restart button, but nothing was happening. He coasted her up to 400 feet.
There's plenty of flat land ahead. Let's try for a landing. But first, dump the fuel. There we go. Okay, here goes nothing.
But as he dove, the gentle flat land ahead became a nightmare maze of canyons and huge boulders.
Of course.
Roxanne jiggled the stick a bit to the left. He took the left fork in the canyon ahead. His airspeed was 500 knots, 470, 420. There was a cliff coming up, dead ahead.
Left!
The area ahead was littered with boulders.
Where the hell is that flat area? Shit, I'm slowing down!
Rock's altimeter was dropping. 300, 250. His speed was dropping, and he knew the thing would drop like a rock below 160 knots. He'd have to bring it in before then.
170, 165. Oh, hey, look at that! The canyon's filled with boulders. And a fucking river! Oh, come on!
The boulders started to clear, but there was a hillock ahead. Trying to land now would end in nothing less than a fireball. He could only hope there was flat ground behind it.
Come on, come on, please, come on! Yes!
There was a small clearing ahead, alongside the raging river. The river, now near him again, emerged from a waterfall in a mist-shrouded cliff dead ahead. The smooth cliff rose thousands of feet high. No way over that. Another huge boulder rose right ahead, with a scruffy pine on it.
Aw, damn!
Roxanne jerked in his seat as the belly of his craft scraped the obstacle. Altitude 70, 60, 30. Clear sand ahead. For a second, he clutched the lever for the landing gear. Then desisted. A belly landing was better on soft sand. Roxanne lifted the plane's nose at the last second, then shielded his face with his arms. He hit the ground hard, skidding on a metal belly. The plane continued to hurl itself towards oblivion. Then Roxanne saw, strung across the canyon before him, a series of clothesline, thick white ropes. More ropes were behind the snapped one. The ropes slowed the fatal hurtle towards the canyon. The next two or three lateral ropes grabbed at the plane's bent nose and didn't let go.
Well, at least I'm alive.
The control panel was in flames, and the billowing black plastic-fed smoke burned his lungs.
Oh, come on, stupid seatbelt! Come on, damn it!
There. I've got to get out.
So Roxanne rushed through the cramped and crumpled cabin and spun the door's circular lock.
Oh, damn it! The frame's bent! Oh, shit!
Roxanne grimaced as he stood and surveyed the wreckage of his sky machine.
Oh, damn it. That was a nice jet, too. Ow. All right, what now? Where the hell am I? The map.
Rock studied the map carefully in the fading light. After a while, he decided that he was in a place the map called Spider Canyon, about 37 miles short of his intended destination. A long walk, but nowhere near impossible. Spider Canyon was a long, many-branched canyon located in a plateau that was a mile high. At this height, in this part of America, the night would be cold. Arctic cold. And he had no parka. It had burned up in the jet.
Ah, well, might as well start walking, keep myself warm. Now, which way is northeast? Damn, still not dark enough to see the stars. It'll get there in a bit. Sky's clear anyway. I'll find a way. I've got what I need. Matches, a map, weapon. Oh, damn it! Oh, damn it, there's gotta be something in here. Come on!
Roxanne was relieved when finally his hands uncovered his shot pistol. It was looking bad, but it was still functional. The Liberator rifle was a fused mess. He looked up at the sky above him. The stars were already coming out, along with flickers of blue-green aurora. A cold wind arose. As cold as it was here in the canyon, it would be much colder up on the plateau. There would be driftwood to make a fire near the river, and water, maybe a fish dinner. Rock quickly decided to stay the night in the canyon. He'd stay warm with a cozy fire sheltered from the winds by the canyon walls. He'd get going bright and early in the morning. Archer needed him alive, after all. He headed down toward the river, back along the skid marks and gouges from the crash landing. It was not long before Roxanne saw the ripped white lines on the dirt. The mysterious ropes that had saved his life by slowing the plane. He had almost forgotten about them. He went over to the first rope, lying torn and twisted. He bent down and found that it was warm and sticky to the touch. Maybe it was some sort of creep vine. He pulled his hand away with some difficulty. If it was a creeper, it could be dangerous. He noticed other broken ropes scattered about. They didn't move, yet he kept his fingers on the butt of his shot pistol he had jammed into his waistband. Roxanne edged away from the ropes, though they continued to remain inert. he took a more circuitous path toward the raging rapids. He spotted some driftwood on the shore. When Roxanne went right toward the twisted branches, he came across animal tracks, not those of hooves like a deer's. The prints were made by three-toed paws. Very peculiar tracks. He bent down and studied them carefully. A strange, pungent odor came into his nostrils of something like musk. The tracks were too numerous, too closely packed for one animal. Maybe the things that had made them were in a tightly packed bunch. Roxen followed them along. The tracks were fresher and fresher as he walked toward the river. Mountain lions? By the shallowness depth of the prints, the creatures weren't very big. Maybe 3 feet high.
Spider Canyon. This place is called Spider Canyon. Those weren't ropes, they were spider webs. What the fuck was that?
Roxen moved stealthily up to the top of a low knoll and peered toward the river. There, in the dim twilight, he saw a dozen 3-foot-wide, furry, white spiders. The monster arachnids were devouring the carcass of an antelope-type creature. The carcass was caught up in some of those very same white ropes that had saved his life. More spiders came and went. Roxanne crawled slowly, silently, back down the way he'd come and scanned the canyon walls, vertical, with few handholds, if any. And it was getting dark, but he knew what was down here. Handholds or no handholds, he'd try a climb. He crouch-ran toward the rock escarpment, holding his shot pistol in his right hand. The flickering aurora above seemed shaped like a skeletal hand. In the near darkness, Roxanne almost ran into another set of the sticky horizontal spider ropes.
Whoa! Damn, that was tough. If I'd gotten more than my hand on the stuff.
He slowly circled the web rope network, not seeing any spiders nearby. This time, he ran flat out. Roxanne's night vision was excellent, and as he raced along, he studied the sheer rock face dead ahead for danger. There were no web ropes that he could see on the cliff, and no place for the spider things to hide. Rock took a quick look back. They were gaining. They were going to get him at the same time he got to the cliff. More of the things just came rushing over the torn and bloody bodies, and Rock had used the whole cliff. Rock just went straight for the cliff as the eight-legged creatures snapped their sharp, drippy mandibles right at Roxanne's boots. Rock leapt up to the cliff and scaled it as fast as he could, his fingers and feet searching out and finding tiny indentations in the rock. In a second, as the spiders, snarling in rage, tried to jump up on his back, Roxanne was already 20 feet up the wall. Imperceptible hand and boot holds. Tiny irregularities that no normal human climber could have managed to secure himself on were as good as a staircase to the desperate Doomsday Warrior. For a second, Rock worried that the spiders might be able to climb the walls, but as he got further and further up, the carnivore spiders continued merely to jump up and fall back.
Huh? What the fuck is wrong with those spiders?
Roxanne lay flat on his aching back, utterly exhausted. He didn't move. He just listened. When he was quite sure nothing lurked nearby, Rock decided he had to move. He was freezing. The minute he tried to get up, he started to hurt. Every muscle in his body had evidently been strained to the utmost by his mad climb to safety. But he could walk. That was the important thing. After an hour of steady plodding on flat surface, he came upon a spectacular rock formation. Glowing in the low moon's yellow light was a sand and wind carved arch of stone. It was about 100 feet high and twice as wide. This, he thought, had to be the so-called Utah Rainbow, clearly delineated upon his map. Roxanne smiled wryly. He was only 23 miles from his intended destination. Better than he had hoped when he crash-landed. But even 23 miles could be a deadly distance if he didn't get some water soon. It might as well be 100. And the cold was worse than he'd expected. Must be minus 50 already, and the night was young. If he was numb with cold now, What about in an hour? He surveyed the moonlit, irregular rocks near the arch and considered crawling into a crevasse in the sandstone formations to try to rest and keep warm till dawn.
No, I'd die if I did that. I have to keep walking until I can make a fire.
He was staggering after just an hour, but Rock kept his head high, trying to tough it out, ignore the cold.
It's getting warmer. What? What's that? It's a pine. It's pine trees. Tinder.
Roxon rushed over to the clump of trees, half stumbling over his own numbed feet, and fell upon the scattered brown needles. Madly, he gathered together a pile of the dry stuff, and with shaking, bluish hands, added a few twigs to the pile. He stayed there, absorbing its growing warmth, until he almost burned his pants off. He found some larger branches and added them to the flames. By the time the sun peaked red over the horizon, Roxon was on his way to getting warm.
Phew. Now, water.
Rock stood and went for a nearby pine tree. He tore off all the needles from an overhanging branch and sucked the dew off. But all the needles held barely a half pint of water. He needed more to keep him going through the hike he was about to resume. His eyes searched around like radar beacons, and soon alighted on some squat, round cacti. A whole mess of them, each about a foot wide.
Are those barrel babies? It is!
Roxon studied the cactus, looking for a spot without too many thorns. Though they barely looked like whiskers now, he knew that they acted like they were spring-loaded. To brush up against the thing would send dozens of sharp needle thorns shooting out to their maximum length of 6 inches. He spied a nearby rock about the size of his hand. The rock impacted on the barrel baby and knocked it clear out of the ground. Knife in hand, Roxon walked toward the cactus, whose thorns had all been deployed. He went to work, carefully cutting off the needles and finally slicing through the thick flesh. He reached and sucked up every ounce of the moisture in its pulpy center.
Tastes so good!
I should do it.
Roxon half-walked, half-crawled back to the now substantial campfire and threw a few more larger sticks upon it. He was still cold, so he half-curled around the flames. Roxon kept his shot pistol in his right hand as he closed his eyes and fell asleep. When he awoke, he knew he had slept for hours. The sun was halfway up in the velvet purple sky. He looked around and, feeling the weight of his gun in his right hand, stuck the shot pistol back in his waistband.
Oh, well, that was a good rest, but it's time to go.
He stomped on the remains of his campfire to make sure it was out, then kicked some dirt to smother the embers. He scratched at his face and rubbed his eyes, and then headed northeast again, as best he could figure the direction. In a few hours, the temperature had skyrocketed. It was hotter than hell, maybe 110 degrees. 6 more hours of walking, and it was nearly sunset. His once cheery thoughts were now drifting to melancholy subjects. He was hungry, and maybe lost. Everything looked pretty much the same out here.
Damn it. Where the hell am I?
He looked all around him at the fields of boulders, the rolling dry terrain. He was in a blank part of the map now. Best he could figure, he should be near the location from which Archer had sent his distress signal. At least he hoped so. But without landmarks, without a compass or a sextant, Archer's mysterious ball corner could be right over the rise to the left, or to the right, or straight ahead, or behind him. He could have overshot it, off course by a mere mile or so. Roxon decided to walk up to the steepest incline and survey the area from there. When he started up the dusty rise to the left, he found something he didn't much like. Tracks. The tracks of several pawed creatures.
Well, it seems like they're not too fresh. About a week old. Oh, shit. This could be what Archer was sending help for.
He put his hand on the reassuring butt of his shot pistol. Comforted by its presence, he continued to the top of the hill. The tracks converged with other similar tracks at the top, then headed off to the west. Shielding his eyes from the setting sun, he didn't see anything like a settlement in any direction. He had a good view here. On all the horizons, north, south, east, and west, were nothing but more boulders and sand and scrub pines. Roxon hiked down from his lofty place, went down the slope, heading northeast, according to the setting sun. Eventually, he came to another rise, this one composed of reddish soil and blessedly clogged with blueberry bushes. He ate his fill of the berries and stored as many as he could for later. Sated, Roxon climbed to the bald top of the blueberry hill, and in the twilight, he saw it. A settlement. To his amazement, Roxon was staring down into a verdant valley. There were 20th century ruins down there. The leftover cracked pavement of an old road and some large concrete block buildings. Each building was surrounded by grass-pocked parking lots. But what attracted his attention most was the sole sign of life down there. From the largest building, which looked like an airplane hangar, curled some black smoke. The smoke was coming from a huge, shiny new metal chimney pipe. An ancient, huge advertising sign hung half-collapsed at the edge of the structure's old parking lot entrance.
What does that say? Looks like a few letters fell off. Bold G-C-N-E-R, huh? Probably one said bowling center. Wait. C-N-E-R. Corner? This is Ball Corner? Archer's down there. Maybe he's the one making the smoke. Maybe the danger's past. Maybe we could have a drink together. Laugh about the long trip I've taken for no reason. Or then again, it could be some enemy down there making that smoke. Maybe some cannibals are cooking up Archer right now. Maybe they're raping him in the face.
Roxon scrambled down the steep, weed-strewn incline onto the flat surface of the old parking lot. He took cover behind the disintegrating hulk of an old oil truck.
Now, let's see if anybody's around.
Rock was surprised to find the ground so soft. But when he opened his eyes, he was greeted by a maggot-infested skull. A foul, musty smell of death assailed his nostrils, almost making him gag. Rock had found the first of many bodies he was to discover, moldering away in that asphalt charnel ground. His vision was very keen, so he could see in the starlight that the deceased were all men, all in unmarked gray uniforms. They were mean-looking mothers, each and every one. The bodies all had their guts blown out of their stomachs. Roxon drew the obvious conclusions. No doubt about it, there were all the signs of a recent battle here. There were bullet holes in the rusted cars and trucks, and craters made by some sort of artillery fire in the parking lot's weeded surface. And there was one big hole in the wall of the large building as well, right in the middle of the bowling center itself. A mortar had made that hole. Roxon ducked from cover to cover, coming closer and closer to the building. He was heading as silently as he could manage for the man-sized shell hole in the wall. He was just 10 feet from that hole, hidden behind the carcass of a 20th century RV, when something happened to Rock that hadn't happened to him for a long time. He was caught flat-footed, a double-barreled shotgun pressing against the back of his head.
Stay still.
I'm not going anywhere.
The voice sounded familiar. Rock moved his head a tiny bit so that he could put the corner of his vision over to the side. He saw a mountainous man holding the weapon. The huge man was wearing a wide-brimmed leather hat and was covered in furs, crudely sewn together. He had a huge, tangled black beard with red and white strands in it. The beard was stuck with old pieces of chewing tobacco and what must have been pieces of food. The dark, beady eyes were calm and direct, if a bit blank. He knew this fellow.
Archer! It's me, Roxon! Archer, you fuckhead, put that shotgun down!
Roxon?
Yeah, you heard me. It's your old pal. Come to rescue you. Is this any way to
Roxon!
Fuck!
Whoop! You okay?
Yeah, but fuck, that was loud.
I'm sorry, Hair Trigger.
It's okay. I'm fine.
Rocks and cake!
Oh, yes! Yeah! It's not me!
So, where's the danger? What's the big emergency? Tell me why I came here.
You see, bodies? It's over now. Big bad gang, but I'm more bad. Come on.
I will if you stop shouting.
Okay, sorry. I make up a little mistake with gun. You come. Come on. Eat, drink. Be happy. You know, forget Archer. Come on, we have beers.
Sure thing. I could go for a beer after the shit I went through to get here.
Okay. Follow me!
Rock trudged along beside the huge man, who headed not for the hole in the building, but for a door further down along the same wall.
So what happened here? Were all these guys here to take you out?
Called Black Magic Boys.
I'm seeing about 20 bodies around here. It was you versus these 20?
Yeah. Shoot at me for a week, so I send message. But then I have idea.
Whoa, idea? Was this before or after that hole in the wall?
Same time. Hole is liquor supply. Scotch. Much scotch. They drink.
And when they started getting drunk...
Bang, 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 bang! Aren't you win?
Yeah, I'd say so. But tell you what, next time send a never mind message, okay?
You know come see me if I'm not in danger. You know, miss me?
No, it's not that, pal. Not at all. It's just that I wouldn't have hurried here. I would have spent a little more time fixing up that junk heap that I crash-landed 40 miles back.
Oh, you hurt. You burned, torn clothes.
No, I'm okay, Archer. No problem landing at all. And it was an easy walk to get here. Just a few spiders tried to bite me along the way. Just a little thirsty, that's all.
Oh, good. I'm glad no problem. Here is home.
They entered a small room, one with some stuffed paisley print furniture and a big Ben Franklin coal stove in it. The stove was almost red hot. The big round pipe leading up from the stove into the ceiling was, no doubt, the source of the smoke Rock had seen from the hill. There were no windows, but still there was lots of light in the room, cast from several brightly burning Coleman lamps placed on tables around the place. The room smelled like spilled draft beer.
Home is nice!
Roxon wasn't so sure. The place Archer called home was a virtual pigsty. Its floors and table surfaces, and its sofa and chairs, were littered with the remains of many well-chewed, poorly cooked chickens. There were crumbling tabloid newspapers scattered everywhere.
Woman lived 7 years trapped in abandoned gas station restroom. Dracula revealed as secret government program to... Archer, you read these things?
Yes, very good stories.
Well... I'm impressed. You learned to read.
Yeah. Was very hard, but worth it. Love the Enquirer.
The Enquirer? You mean... Oh, never mind.
Rock wiped a finger over the dust on a little end table full of chicken bones and frowned.
Ah, not best part. Come see Big Room.
The big man opened a second door, and they went on into a vast chamber dimly lit by skylights high above. It was cold in there.
Wow.
They were in an ancient bowling alley. There were 24 wood-floored lanes, and AMF pin spotters, some with dusty pins still standing in them, waiting for a strike for over 100 years. There were lines of bowling balls, too. Rock smiled and went over to one of the big black balls and was about to stuff 2 fingers into the little holes in one black ball to pick it up and throw it. But just then, a mean-looking caterpillar, a red one full of spikes, crawled out of one of the finger holes.
Yeah, fuck that.
He noted now that half the lanes had their flooring ripped up. That explained the wood and varnish smell coming from the old stove back in Archer's pigsty room. The giant was gradually consuming his own domicile to keep warm. There must have been years' worth of flooring left to burn.
Well?
It's nice, A very nice place.
Sit! Drink! Here! Let's beer!
Roxanne took the can. It was warm, despite having just come from the fridge. Of course, there was no electricity here.
Yeah.
Drink! Good, yes.
Yeah, it's good. Nice and warm. Maybe you have some other brand, just for variety?
Yeah. Have bottles. It's Budweiser. Good?
Sure. Give it here. Thanks. That's good.
I like Budweiser.
Yeah, me too. So, it's kind of cold in here. How about we head back to the stove?
Yeah, I get more beers, though.
That's nice and warm.
Yeah, it's sometimes cold outside.
Sometimes. It must have been 50 below last night.
Yeah, cold.
So, what have you been up to?
Hunting, learning to read, much drinking.
Sounds pretty good, actually.
Yeah, have lots of firewood, newspaper. Quiet, mostly. But sometimes miss old days. Miss fighting Reds most. Miss trips to Russia on rocket ship. Remember me fly with you? Remember we prisoner in Soviet rocket?
Yeah, I remember. Oh, that was some good times. I also seem to remember you farted up there in space and nearly killed everyone on board with the smell.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes visitors drop by.
Visitors?
You see, nice visitors. Sometimes wild women come. Great looks women. They all alone. Woman alone tribe. Want to get pregnant. And me help them.
What do these women look like?
Very pretty. Green skin. They very strong. They say, must help us to make more Barbaras. And I do.
Huh. I met the Barbaras once on one of our missions.
They say same things?
Pretty much.
You do same things?
Yep. They can be very dangerous. They practically killed me when I met them. Be careful.
Oh, me always careful. And they great in sack. Oh, I have other visitor right now. You will see him. Just after kill Batman, find hungry dying man out on road. He stay here, get healthy on food I make.
You have a visitor right now? Where is he?
I'm right here.
Roxanne spun around, his hand on his pistol. There was a tiny, thin man in a red tunic and curled front red slippers standing there, smiling.
Hello, I'm Zarko Realness. Who are you?
I'm Ted Roxanne. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Ted Roxanne? You're the great Doomsday Warrior. You're the man who saved America.
Well, sort of.
Oh, I am glad. I am so glad to meet you. Excitement only diminished by tiredness factor. You understand? Sustenance necessary to restore health. Comprehend?
Yes, I do.
Roxanne stared at the diminutive figure intently. The elf man wore no weapons. He had a long, pointy nose, high cheekbones, and a tiny goatee.
Are you a technician?
Anyway, my people like the so-called technicians race you speak of. They live in old missile silos. Living underground for so long affected our bodies in much the same way as that race you speak of now. But the technicians, I so comprehend, are all dead now, far as I equate. My people call themselves the techno-survivors, and I'm very happy, glad, pleased to meet you.
The little man shot out a hand to shake Roxanne's, who took it. It felt like a small, cold child's hand.
How long have you been here?
Oh, about a week now. I was very sick, but our friend's magical relaxing liquid refreshment restored me.
Here you go.
Ah, thanks. Ah, that's good. I traveled far to bring good news to Archer. We knew of him for years. We know of Century City and all the guerrilla wars, everything for years. Huh? We monitor broadcasts from our sealed missile silos. We decided to open up to the world outside once we heard over wavelengths that happy, joyously wonderful, there is at last peace. Techno survivors have a high level of science. We make many things, and we decided in meeting to offer such things as we make to the other Americans. Americans like you and Archer. I set out to bring word to the nearest American who lives on the surface. That's Archer. But I'm not used to cold and to wind. I got very sick. Almost didn't make it.
Well, I'm glad you did. What sort of things are you techno survivors manufacturing? Do you want to trade them for some of Century City's goods? If so, I...
No, not trade. These things we make are gifts to you to show appreciation for finally winning the war with the Red Soviets. Oh, we're eager. We'll return favor to great American patriots. I got a gift for you, Roxanne, for all American heroes. Not here. It's too big to bring. You and Archer will come to see it in Cave Town. Not far. 2 days by foot walking.
What is it?
Technical description has no equivalent. Device NQ27364JTY is utterly new and fun, too. But best fun is for dying men heroes. Thing devices, ultra goody-good for life's last days.
A fun thing for the dying? I don't have a hell of a lot of time, Zydeco. I should go back to my home. Maybe I can send someone from Century City to fetch it. From your cave town. Give me the directions. I'll tell the city council.
No. Now you come and get it. Now. We don't like to be dissed. Warning. Last people to dissed us are evaporate, gone, deceased, eliminated.
Dissed?
Disrespected us. One thing we techno survivors can't stand is being dissed. I tell my people you don't accept a nice gift. They might shoot a few old missiles at your city. Truth, veracity, sincerity.
Are you threatening me?
Oh, no, I'm not. That would be dissing you. I tell it like it is. Accept gift, then we friends. Friends forever. Please don't make me tell them you dissed us.
All right. Okay, Zydeco. I won't diss you. I will go and accept your present. You want to come with me, Archer?
Yeah, adventure. Me come.
Cave Town lies 50 miles due south.
This device, is it heavy?
Oh, yeah.
Then how am I supposed to get it back to Century City?
Anti-gravity. It leaps off the ground. I didn't leave it behind because it is heavy, but because it is our custom that giftee come accept gifts from us.
Terrific.
It was around midnight before they had packed what they needed.
Now, no walking at night, too cold.
Fair enough. We can leave at dawn, after a good night's sleep.
Oh, so, where's the beds, Archer?
I will have them show you.
Them?
Out of a side room paraded 5 green-skinned young wild women. Their cat-like yellow eyes flickered with lust. Their tongues rolled over their lips.
Ha! A hellcat's in bed. Smell like lollipops.
Yeah, I know. Last time I was with a Barbara, scratches took a month to heal.
Yeah, they real good.
It had been interesting for sure.
Oh, I'm gonna take 3 super nutrition liquids to bed with me for energy. Fun is ability divided by quotient of energy.
The little man picked up 3 old cans and disappeared with a pair of the green girls into a side room. They towered over the little man, but he didn't seem bothered by that. Nor did they. The tallest and slinkiest wild woman caught Rock's admiring eye. She approached and pressed her warm, slithery green body against him, and her long blue hair slid across his cheek. She began an erotic dance, pushing her groin into his crotch. The subtle approach.
Ah, what the hell. Where's my room, Archer?
Second door on right.
The last 2 women put their arms around the mountain man's massive waist. Rock and the wild women went into the side room. There was a small lit lamp and a mattress on the floor, covered with a patchwork quilt that didn't look too dirty, plus a case of beer. Archer Inn, Honeymoon Hotel.
Now, what's your...
Hold on! Hey! Okay! Ow! Ow! That actually came! All right, I like it. Oh, hey! Come on!
So you brought your own toy.
Whoa!
Good morning. Huh? She's gone. She used me. Oh, my back. Goddamn she-cat. I could really go for some coffee.
He sluggishly pulled on his pants and undershirt, thoroughly checking all his gear as he did so. He still had his knife, shot pistol, and all his ammo, though the Barbara had left in the middle of the night just like last time. She hadn't stolen any of his stuff.
Is that,
Coffee!
Oh, Archer, you're the best. How'd you snag some?
Women bring. He's good.
It sure smells it.
Rock found a mug that didn't look too stained and brought it to the stove where Archer had a bubbling hot pot of coffee.
Oh, that is good. I'm telling you, Archer, you've made yourself a regular paradise here. Are all the women gone?
Yeah. They don't stick around, but leave presents.
Archer, where's Zydeco?
Tall, great experience! Excellent physical abilities, good energy levels. Energy is product of ratio.
Yeah, we know. And good fingernails, too. Sit down, Zydeco, and have a mug. After coffee, we'll set off for that cave town of yours. It's a long walk, so...
Oh, no walk. Women leave mounts as presents. Three mounts. We ride.
Oh, hey, that's great. What kind of horses are they?
They're not horses.
Oh, mules? Donkeys?
Come see.
Archer led them into the blinding light of morning.
Holy fuck me. They're ostriches.
Not exactly. They're much better than that. I believe these mounts are Guam rail birds. Very large ones. Woman tribe uses them.
The 7-foot-high birds had their bridles tethered to a fallen branch under a bare tree. They turned their long necks and gazed suspiciously at the three men. The plumage of the birds was multicolored, like peacocks. But the birds were shaped more like quails. Rock spotted silvery embossed edging on the tawny leather saddles. He approached the birds slowly, and they seemed to back off.
I saw the wild woman come here a few days ago riding some of these big birds with a few spares along. They told me it's important to smile when you approach the birds. Show no fear. Otherwise, they can bite you or kick you with their big taloned feet. Whop! Those very rough, tough, mean birds. They're descended, I believe, from some of the smaller species that escaped from the zoos during the Nuke War. Those saddles are put on once. They stay on. They don't mind the saddles.
They can take Archer's weight?
They can carry us all easily, though Archer's feet may brush the ground. Hey, buddy, how you do, huh? Yeah. Would you like some grass? Here you go.
Zydeco.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah, buddy, some nice, tasty grass. Good girl. Archer will get this big one. She likes my man, don't you, Maha?
The bird seemed to nod, and then leaned into his caress, and he gave her some more grass.
Your bird is called Zaza, Roxon. My baby is Mumu.
We get stuff.
The three returned inside to get the last of their stuff. Rock was given a parka that Archer took from one of the long-dead raiders.
All right, let's mount up.
The Doomsday Warrior approached the second bird, Zaza, with the utmost caution, smiling as broadly as he could manage. The huge bird squatted down.
There you go, just like the camels. The Guam rail kneel for the rider to more easily mount them.
Well, here goes nothing.
As Rock scrambled up into the soft leather saddle, a few feathers fluffed off the bird's molting neck, and one stuck in his nose.
Don't sneeze! They go mad if you sneeze! Remember, never, never, never sneeze!
Just great. Giddy up, Zaza!
You say turp, turp!
Turp, turp!
They all took off at a trot. Soon, they couldn't even see the bowling center. Rock figured they were making about 20 miles per hour. The ride was smooth and rolling, almost dreamlike. The adventurers traversed rolling grasslands for a while. Then the flat, frozen turf gave out onto a desert plain scattered with red-leafed pine shrubs.
How do you know where we're going? Are you following some landmarks? Do you have a compass?
We Daniel survivors have an innate sense of direction.
Okay, then.
The birds were running flat out now on the hard surface. Rock estimated that they were making about 100 miles per hour. The wind was icy. Good thing Archer had provided him with that parka. After they rode for another hour, a rolling mist scented with something that must have been decayed carcasses came at them.
That's just a warm front. These Guam rails can see the fog. We don't have to slow down.
They rode on at breakneck speed into the white-out solid mist.
Oh, this is gonna be bad.
Suddenly, the mist thickened and became dark as obsidian. They slowed down all of a sudden. Even the bird's keen infrared detecting eyes couldn't make things out in all this denseness. The birds seemed to shiver as if they were cold or afraid.
Oh, crap. Snakes. A lot of them.
Where'd they come from?
I can't tell in this fog. Do these birds fly?
Shit, I wish.
Roxon quickly had his shock pistol out and was pointing it at his best guess of where the rattlers were.
Put the guns away and hold on tight. Very tight to your saddles and the reins.
Zydeco, what are you...
I'm trying to spook the birds. You just hold on tight, okay?
Okay.
Dispatog! Dispatog!
The Guam rails all started to leap into the air. They didn't fly, but they sure as hell could jump. Roxon realized that Zydeco was trying to have the birds hop right over the snakes, but it didn't work. When the megabirds came down, they were right in the middle of a circle of writhing 10-foot-long pissed-off snakes.
Good fucking job, Zydeco. Real smooth. Glad we put you in the lead.
All the shaking and flapping shook off clouds of itchy, twitchy feathers. Roxon got one jammed into his nostrils. The birds suddenly went nuts, losing their fear and jumping around as if someone had put a branding iron to their voluminous asses. The birds' talons dug into snake bodies. They jumped and kicked and pecked at the snakes, oblivious to the many venomous strikes against them. Then it was over. Over as fast as it had begun. There were nothing but torn open snakes below the birds' bloody toes, and the rest of the rattlers were sliding away into the mists. The birds simmered down. Roxon tried and succeeded in not repeating his sneezing fit, although fluff was everywhere in the misty air.
Holy shit!